Welcome to Straight Talk, a lively discussion on tough issues impacting our lives. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio. Here's your host, Gene Wells, brought to you by Blackbird Investments.
Well, welcome to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio. It's your weekly dose of news from the diocese and around the world, plus commentary on issues that are impacting our lives. Some you might go, that's not such a big issue, but really today's is one of those that we have to give some considerable thought to. Straight Talk. You've got questions, we've got some answers for you. I'm Gene Wells, and so blessed to be here broadcasting from Iowa Catholic Radio in the Mercy One studio, and also grateful to Blackbird Investments for sponsoring Straight Talk. Doing what is challenging because it is right, that's Blackbird Investments. When it comes to building real estate, they look for creative solutions by forming strategic alliances, creating energy-efficient buildings, and engaging with local craftsmen. I love that. At its core, Blackbird believes in giving buildings a new life. For more information, blackbirdinvest.com. On today's show, we are talking about shifting boundaries and what determines a parish community today. So just some background. In the Diocese of Des Moines, we encompass a 23-county area in the southwest corner of the state. Now, geographically, we are just slightly larger than the Davenport Diocese, just by one county. But we have the smallest percentage of Catholics to total population, with 12% of our residents identifying themselves as Catholic. So, you know me, I love math. That equates to approximately 8 Catholic people in every square mile of the diocese. How do you get anything done with just 8 people in a square mile? Well, as we are discussing our shifting parish boundaries, now there's no pun intended here, with the flooding in southwest Iowa, my first guest is Father Dan Siepker, pastor of Our Lady of the Rosary in Glenwood. His parish community, along with St. Mary's in Hamburg, St. Mary in Shenandoah, St. Patrick in Missouri Valley, Holy Family Parish in Mount Damon, and St. Anne Parish in Logan have all been devastated by the flooding. Father Dan, thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome. It's good to be with you.
You know, I know that, sometimes even people that are 20 miles away from the flooding can just think it's so far removed from what's going on in their neck of the woods that they don't really consider the devastation. But, you know, we have seen, roads and farms and homes and parishes, especially like St. Mary's in Hamburg, have great devastation. And I wanted to have you on today to find out how your parish family is doing in Glenwood.
Yeah, and that's a good point that you make there, because we set in the Lost Hills.
Mm-hmm.
Missouri River is to the west of us, and until roads started being blocked, in a lot of ways, this community wasn't that much affected.
Mm-hmm.
And then as roads started being blocked off, especially Highway 29, because the majority of our parishioners work up in Council Bluffs or Omaha, and that's the main thoroughfare for getting up there.
Mm-hmm.
We started feeling it then. Well, then Sunday night, our water plant went under.
Mm.
So one gal said, we are now involuntary participants.
Yeah, we don't have water in our basement, but we don't have water.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. We have flushable water, but not drinkable water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the people, unless you drive outside of town, you don't see the devastation even here.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to get far outside of town to see it.
Mm-hmm. I read an article yesterday about some communities that they're doing this lighting system. So if they put blue lights, I think it's blue, in their yard or on their light poles outside their garages or whatever, they you can drop off your laundry with your name and phone number, and they will do your laundry for you. And others that have well water, you know, if they have green lights on, they can come in and fill up and get water to take home. And I think, what a wonderful community that says, here's how I can help. Here's a specific thing I can do. And, you know, it may not be much in the big scheme of the billions of dollars of damage, but it's priceless to the ones that are being helped.
Right. Yeah.
In your family, in your parish family specifically, have you had someone that's really been hard hit?
We've got 10 to 12 families. I'm not sure for the exact number, but we're thinking 10 to 12 families that we know for sure that are, their everything's gone. Yeah, they've lost farms, they've lost houses. Some of them had enough warning to get a lot of their property out, but yet, you know, they still lost a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right. We just found out yesterday in the area we've got a total of 410 families that are displaced.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
Well, on today's show, our topic is we're talking about shifting boundaries, and it doesn't necessarily relate to devastation like what you're experiencing, but it does in a way, in that, you know, your parish will have a negative impact over time. You know, perhaps, you know, those 10 to 12 families, if they've lost everything, they may rebuild in your area or they may just move away. How is your parish community rallying to help them know that that community is behind them?
We're certainly trying to find, you know, everybody's been able to find temporary housing for the time being, but, you know, as the worst of it is right now, we're kind of in a waiting game for the water to go back down. And with the spring melt still happening happen up north, God only knows when that's going to be. And the dikes are so compromised that if they have, you know, it's like they said on the radio this morning, they're starting to release more water out of Gavin's Point Dam again. That's going to raise the Missouri River back up again, which is going to cause more flooding again. So it could be months before, you know, the water level gets down to where we can even go in and begin to assess whether or not they can rebuild, whether or not anything's salvageable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just trying to support them as best we can now, but down the road of saying, we'll be there to help you clean up. And the one farmer I was talking with this morning, he says the amount of debris he's got within his fields, he says it's going to take them months to clean those fields up. I says, well, hopefully we can get crews together and one that gets dry and get out there with flatbeds and start picking up.
Because you can't plant if you have debris in your fields.
Right, yeah.
Well, Father Dan, thank you so much for joining us. Know that you and your parish and your parish families will be in our prayers and all of those that are flooded. And I would like to remind our listeners that if you haven't heard yet, Bishop Pates has asked for a special collection. Maybe you did it this last weekend. Maybe you're doing it this weekend to help support those parish communities that are so devastated by this flooding. And I hope you will be generous in helping them. You know, they are the heartland, and we are the heartland. So we as a parish family will come together. Yep, Father?
Can I make one final point before?
Absolutely.
Let me go. If people are wanting to donate material things, such as water, such as clothes, cleaning supplies, that kind of stuff, at the present time, we are overstocked almost.
Okay.
But we're going to need it. And so I had two parishes call me last week, and I was able to put them off for 2-3 weeks and say, wait.
Right.
But if they don't want to wait, if they would call our flood hotline.
What number is that?
That number is 712-520-4000.
Great. I will post that on the Straight Talk website, and I'll ask Iowa Catholic Radio to post it on their Facebook page so we can get that flood hotline number out to all of our listeners.
I appreciate it.
Yes. Thanks, Father Dan. God bless.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you. Folks, some news that are of interest. Over this past weekend, another Catholic church in France was set on fire just after the midday mass this past Sunday. Firefighters and police said the blaze was an arson attack. And in February, a 19th century statue of the Virgin Mary was completely pulverized. The church reported 3 incidences in 10 days, with a cross also thrown on the floor by vandals. Three other separate incidences also occurred in February, with statues and cross smashed, altar cloths burned, human excrement used to draw a cross on the wall, consecrated hosts stolen and thrown outside. Father Emmanuel Pick, one of the pastors there, denounced the attack as on the heart of the Catholic faith. There have been 12 attacks in the last month in France. When we say that there is religious persecution, it is all over the world. Let's pray for those folks in France, for those Catholic churches. And the other half of the world, a Catholic priest in Montreal is in stable condition after being stabbed during Friday morning Mass. Father Claude Grau was celebrating Mass when the attacker ran from the back of the rectory, the back of the church, and stabbed him in the chest. The stabbing was captured on video as their daily Mass is broadcast live each morning. I just can't fathom that. Good news for Cardinal Daniel DiNardo, former bishop of the Sioux City Diocese and current president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. He was released from the hospital after suffering a mild stroke, but please continue to keep him in your prayers as he completes his rehabilitation over the next week or so. Some upcoming events. Saturday, Iowa Catholic Men's Conference is March 30th. You can still register for that. The day begins at 8 a.m. and wraps up by 3 p.m. And Deacon Harold Burke Sivers, who you heard this morning on Iowa Catholic Radio, and Deacon Randy Keel will be speaking. Eucharistic Adoration and Reconciliation is available. Sign up at iowacatholicradio.com. And ladies, your next Mosaic Luncheon is Thursday, April 11th at St. Francis, and the featured speaker is Jeanette Howe, founder of the Seven Sisters Apostolate. And they, that apostolate is to a call to strengthen the church by ensuring that a holy hour is prayed each day of the week for a sole intention of a specific priest or bishop. Again, registered iowacatholicradio.com. And also mark your calendar June 14th for the first Iowa Catholic Radio golf outing presented by Permar Security. Get that on your calendar. More information, registration will be coming up. Now, after this break, we will visit with Father P.J. McManus, and we'll be discussing the shifting boundaries of our parish and what determines a parish community today. You can text us your questions and comments at 515-223-1150 throughout the show. It's time for Straight Talk, right now on Iowa Catholic Radio.
Rock Valley Physical Therapy, dedicated to your health and well-being. Serving patient needs to making better lives, we have outstanding outpatient physical therapy, occupational hand therapy, and sports medicine rehabilitation. Rock Valley offers unprecedented one-on-one care. With 7 convenient locations in the Des Moines Metro to the Southwest Iowa area, we serve the entire diocese. For more information, rockvalleypt.com or 515-221-1621. Rock Valley Physical Therapy, making better lives.
Thank you, Blessed International, for their support of Iowa Catholic Radio. Everyone lives their life 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. How we use that time directly affects if our life will leave a significant impact or not. Each year, Blessed International leads Central Iowans on a 12-day, all-inclusive experience sharing the heart of Christ with children in South Africa. Teams are forming to do something significant in an African child's life. Learn more at blessedinternational.org. That's blessedinternational.org.
The April Man Up West Power Lunch, It's Almost Over, is Friday, April 12th at noon, St. Francis of Assisi, with newly ordained Deacon Randy Keel. Deacon Randy will lead a strong charge to live according to the blessings that Christ and His Church has bestowed upon us and help finish Lent with a personal Via Dolorosa. This Man Up West Power Lunch promises to help you lean into Palm Sunday and Holy Week. The Man Up West Power Lunch is Friday, April 12th at noon, St. Francis of Assisi. Register for the Man Up West Power Lunch and a chance to win a gift card from Tamia Incense at iowacatholicradio.com.
Hi, this is Marty McDonald with McDonald Imaging Solutions. It has been my joy to support Iowa Catholic Radio's new event tents and the Pope on a Stick fan used at the Iowa State Fair. McDonald Imaging Solutions is a family-owned business with thousands of promotional items to choose from. We do custom labels, printing, branded apparel, and we provide all kinds of promotional products. I personally help any business, big or small, to build their brand with corporate apparel and promo items. McDonald Imaging Solutions, building brands, attracting new customers. Online, McDonaldImagingSolutions.com.
Welcome back to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio. This is Jean Wells, and I encourage you to text us at 515-223-1150. We're talking about our parish boundaries. Are you in the right boundary? Really? Is that what we're talking about? My guest today is Father P.J. McManus. He's the pastor at Christ the King. I mean, aren't there rules? Don't we have to follow certain parish boundaries? And if we're outside of them, you have to pay more or something. Isn't that how that works?
So when my grandparents were dating back in the late 20s, they were both employees down at Mercy Hospital. And my grandma was a nurse, and my grandpa was a custodian, a janitor at the hospital. And on Sundays, grandma would work an overnight from Saturday to Sunday, and they would have mass at the hospital like they still do, especially for the employees so that they're able to get to mass because they'd be working all night and not be able to go. And grandpa, you know, because he wanted to go to mass with his girlfriend, would come up and go to mass at the hospital on Sunday morning. And Father McElhaney would tell him, Mac, you can be here, and you can even receive Holy Communion, but you need to go back to the cathedral, which is where you're a parishioner, and go to Mass again to satisfy your obligation.
What?
So in the old days, attachment to the particular parish, the geographic parish in which you lived, was much more stringent and strong and constrained. But of course, it's worth remembering that for most of human history, people didn't go more than a couple miles from home. And so you were attached to your parish priest because, for the most part, people weren't supposed to be going from Urbandale to Johnston. And,
right.
And we live in a different world now, a world of shifting boundaries. And the church is, as it often does, it's taking its time to figure out exactly how to respond.
You know, it's interesting in the story about your grandparents. It's not like St. Ambrose had a big attendance book and was checking off that that Grandpa showed up. It was really a comment to his soul.
That's right. It was largely an honor system until it came to other sacraments. Marriage is the big one, so that you had to have jurisdiction. You still do in some ways. You have to have jurisdiction over the person to be able to marry them. I can't just start marrying people willy-nilly. And the same is true.
Oh, really? I thought we were the church of willy-nilly.
We are the church of willy-nilly.
No.
Sometimes I am willy-nilly, but that's a different problem.
What?
So the idea is, right, that the church is an ordered hierarchy. It's an organized, structured kind of unit, and that, you know, you don't walk on your hands on purpose. And so, you have a relationship to a parish priest, the pastor of a particular place, because you belong to a particular community. But part of what makes this tricky, right, is that in the past, parishes have largely been geographical entities. We don't do geography the way we used to, and so we priests are trying to figure out how to pastor differently.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that wasn't the only way parishes were established. I mean, St. Anthony's, to me, still is the Italian parish.
Right.
I don't know, was it established like one of those nationality churches?
Oh,
where
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah. So yeah. If you read the diocesan history book that Father Avella put out, actually, the pastor, the rector of the cathedral at the time, actually lied about the way that St. Anthony's was established to try and get more money out of people. So St. Anthony's did have territory at the beginning, which would have cut out part of St. Ambrose's existing territory, and of course the Monsignor at the time wanted the tithes, and so he told the people that parish was only for the Italians that live on the other side of the railroad, and that was not true, and he got kind of slapped down for that.
Oh.
Sometimes even priests make mistakes.
What?
But this one first and foremost. But so it's true that you've for a long time, there's been a distinction between what we would call territorial parishes and what usually used to be known as national parishes. In this country, they were established largely for particular immigrant communities in order to provide the sacraments and counsel, at least to some degree, in their own language. Now, of course, the liturgy was mostly in Latin at the time anyway, but
irrelevant.
Well,
I mean, as
you needed a priest who could hear your confession.
Mm-hmm.
And then oftentimes the homily would be given in whatever the native language of the people was. National parishes weren't as big a deal in a lot of other places because you didn't have the same kind of mass immigration that we did in the 19th and early 20th century. Today, we don't call them national parishes. We call them personal parishes.
Personal?
Right.
Okay.
And the idea is that personal parishes are established for particular purposes. So it would be things. National parishes are like one example of a personal parish. So in this part of the world, you know, something like Our Lady of the Americas or St. Peter's, the way that those focus on a particular ethnic community, that would be sort of what kind of identifies them. But St. Catherine's at Drake would be another example of a personal parish that exists for a different kind of purpose. In that case, the ministry to the students at the mm-hmm. university. So university parishes are probably the
But
the
other people belong to those parishes.
Yeah, they do. Though belong is a you need to put that in sneer quotes.
Okay.
So registration is not precisely what identifies somebody as a member of a parish, and that's part of what makes these shifting boundaries so difficult. So if you look at the law, I'm not just responsible for the people who bother to put their names on my rolls. I'm supposed to be responsible for everybody from Watrous to County Line Road, whether they're on the rolls or not. And so
Indianola is responsible for the city of Indianola
and its
surrounding areas. Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so it's not altogether clear sort of who's responsible for which things where. And one place where the rubber hits the road pretty profoundly for your parish priest, right, is that people get old and they have to move into care facilities, and the care facility is now
on the other side
of town. So am I responsible for the person, or is the priest whose territory the care facility is responsible for the person?
But you've been my pastor forever.
Well, and so, you know, what most priests do, because they want to be good priests and good pastors to their people, is so, like, I go see people in Johnson and I go see people in West Des Moines or whatever, but I also try and respect the authority and the jurisdiction of the guy who's actually in charge up there. So while I would visit my own people and anoint or confess or whatever the people that are there, and if somebody saw me, they saw a priest is there and they want to talk to me, I'm not going to say no. But I'm not going to establish a regular mass at a nursing home in somebody else's backyard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do that without asking his permission first. Right. So, but it's trickier. Like there's not a clear rule book about exactly how all this is supposed to work. And I think the reason for it is people's patterns of travel are just changing so much. It's hard for us to catch up.
We've almost become a consumer society when it comes to our churches. And, you know, it's as if they're competing franchises, you know, which Applebee's is your favorite?
Right.
You know, and so, that may be healthy in a free market economy, but what about for our churches where it's like, well, I don't like that priest, so I'm going to go to this parish, or I like this religious ed program or that one. And I know, just personally, my kids were going to All Saints, and their children are now ready for school, and so they've now transferred over to St. Teresa's because they want to belong to the parish where the school is at.
Sure.
So it's like the boundaries were irrelevant.
Right. So you know, this all began to shift in the years after Vatican II, and then up to when the Code of Canon Law changed in the early 80s. This is one of those cases where the law kind of follows what people have done rather than the other way around, which is not always a great way to do law. But the people just started ignoring them, and priests stopped enforcing what was going on. And so then we had to sort of accommodate once people had just abandoned the traditional model. The problem is this, and this is the real reason I wanted to talk today. Mm-hmm. It's not so much because I think I've got a lot of answers. I don't. But I want to start a conversation, not just here between you and I,
mm-hmm.
but sort of on a broader scale around what our parishes are for.
Mm-hmm.
The old model, which was real old, wasn't a 19th century sort of thing. It was like a second, third century sort of thing, was useful in that it reflected the church's vision of itself. The church is Catholic. It's universal. So it exists in all times and all places. And so Christ the King, really and importantly, isn't a building, the corner of Wall and Southwest 9th. It is the people of God that happen to live on the south side of the south side,
mm-hmm.
between Watrous and County Line.
You know, I remember when the first time I went to a mass by myself in a city, you know, I was a young adult.
Right.
And I just felt instantly at home because it was the same mass that I had at home, and felt that real sense of community. And it's like, oh, this is good. This is my new parish, new town. It wasn't, oh, maybe just a few months ago where someone said, oh, I went to mass at such and such a place. And boy, that was sure different from my home parish.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, where is that community that I felt 40 years ago?
Well, so I would maintain that, like, that sort of response, which I've heard too, I think this is actually a symptom of the overall problem, which is that for a lot of different reasons, most of them I think largely unintentional, we adopted what is basically a Protestant model of parish, which is that parishes are communities of particular association, a voluntary association. You join them like you would the Elks or the Moose or the Masons or something like that, or the Bridge Club or the Bowling League. And that what makes you a member of a parish is the fact that you go there and presumably that you register or put your name someplace so they know who you are. The problem is, of course, that Protestant communities, by and large, can afford to do this because they don't have any immediate relationship with one another. Even if their brand is the same, you know, the pastor of the United Methodist place two doors down from me and the pastor of the United Methodist place on Douglas, they belong to the same denomination, but they don't really have a whole lot to do with each other, right? Whereas the Catholic churches all have an immediate and personal relationship with each other, which is why we share resources and have a common high school and mm-hmm. our kids do the same, right? Like, we're very intentionally part of it. And, of course, our clergy are shared back and forth. That's the whole kind of principle. Mm-hmm. And so so what's happened is we've created a situation where we're in competition with one another over a limited pool of theoretical parishioners. Our schools are in competition with each other over a limited pool of potential students. And it's a dumb way to do business.
Straight talk right here in Iowa Catholic Radio. Yeah.
No. Father McManus thinks it's dumb.
Yeah.
And the reason is, right, that if we are, in fact, all in this together, and the parishes are really just meant to be sort of subdivisions of the diocese, whether that's organized geographically or not, then we need to really strategically and intentionally organize both the way that people, you know, go to places, but then the way, like on our end, the priest end or the administrative end, the way that we administer goods and services. You take something like St. Teresa's 4:30 Mass. Mm-hmm. That has not been a function of St. Teresa Parish for 40 years, probably. It's a function of the Diocese of Des Moines that St. Teresa happens to take good care of.
Mm-hmm.
But like 85% of the people there don't really have anything to do with St. Teresa. They're just hitting it because
it's one of the last chance masses.
Right. Mm-hmm. On our side of town, we hear a lot of confessions at Christ the King. I know 65-70% of the people whose confessions we hear aren't our people. Now, I'm not about to turn people away from the sacrament. That's not the idea. But rather than have these just kind of happen accidentally, I think we really need to strategically organize the way that we offer the sacraments and Mass, of course, but other services too, so that we're not creating redundancies and hurting ourselves.
Well, like, for instance, we have the Lenten Reconciliation Services. You know, there's 20 of them listed.
Right.
You know, and it's like, okay, well, what about having 5 of them with 20 priests at each one as opposed to 20 of them with 5 priests at
right,
each one?
Right.
You know, you still can serve the same folks and you have that critical mass and now 20 priests are not spread so thin.
Right.
Yeah.
Now today's a really good example of that. So both tonight at Sacred Heart and at Holy Trinity, you're going to have communal penance services. Now this is in no way a slam against either of the parishes.
Oh no,
you need
of course
to do
not.
What you're doing, right? But and I'm sure that these weren't organized like to be in competition with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, is somebody from West Des Moines at 7 o'clock at night going to drive to Beaverdale just to go to confession? Probably not. But
People like to go to a priest that they don't know.
Well, that they don't know. Of course, they're bringing in somebody. I mean, that's what happens with these communal penance services. My whole point here is that people clearly don't parish the way they used to parish.
Mm-hmm.
And so pastors can't afford to pastor the way that we've always pastored, which is the reason that the bishop keeps talking about this new moment. We're in a new space mm-hmm. with the way that people relate to the church.
Yeah. We're going to talk about how we relate to the church and what we can do about it individually, our pastors, our faith community when we come back. This is Jean Wells. You're listening to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio. 50 years ago, tuition and costs at Catholic elementary schools were mostly absorbed by parishes. Now, higher salaries for lay teachers and new technologies have greatly increased the cost for families. Hi, I'm Jean Wells at the Catholic Tuition Organization, and my job is to reduce tuition costs for families and award great tax credits to generous donors. Want to help? Please donate today at ctoiowa.org. Let's do this for the kids and their future.
Doing what is challenging because it's right. That's Blackbird Investments. In 2013, Blackbird Investments was born from the inspiration of St. Kevin. When it comes to building real estate, they look for creative solutions by forming strategic alliances, creating energy-efficient buildings, and engaging with local craftsmen. At its core, Blackbird Investments believes in giving buildings a new life. BlackbirdInvest.com. Blackbird Investments. Doing what is challenging because it's right.
There are millions of children that go hungry every day. Thank you to Skeffington's Formalware for supporting Mary's Meals. Their vision is that every child in the world should be able to receive at least one good meal every day in a place of education. Mary'sMealsUSA.org.
Men, the Iowa Catholic Men's Conference is Saturday, March 30th at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church, starting with an 8 a.m. Mass and conference to follow. Deacon Harold Burke Sivers and Deacon Randy Keel are the guest speakers for the Iowa Catholic Men's Conference. Deacon Harold is an author, evangelist, preacher, and co-host for EWTN's Morning Glory, heard weekday mornings on Iowa Catholic Radio. Deacon Randy is a marriage and family counselor. The Iowa Catholic Men's Conference, Saturday, March 30th at St. Francis of Assisi. Find more information and register at iowacatholicradio.com.
Thank you, Big Red Q Quick Print, for underwriting the sports report. Family owned and operated since 1980, Big Red Q Quick Print is a full service print shop, ready to help you with all your printing needs with speed and accuracy. BigRedQ-Des Moines.com.
Welcome back. This is Jean Wells at Iowa Catholic Radio. We are doing straight talk this morning, straight talk on our parishes, our parish boundaries. What do we do? What does our pastor do? What is the purpose of our parish? How has it changed? And my guest is Father P.J. McManus, pastor of Christ the King. And, you know, I was just talking about how this changes. You know, I'm thinking, okay, how do parish boundaries really work? I mean, we've got the Knights,
right?
Have their parish boundaries, you know, typically the Altar and Rosary Society, whatever that may be called in individual parishes. I mean, are there parish boundaries? Otherwise, I mean,
so if there are, they're very difficult to determine. A chancery official who will remain nameless moved relatively recently, and when he moved, he realized that they would be in a different parish, and so he called the two parishes that he thought he was probably in to figure out which one was theoretically theirs, and neither could tell him. And so then
didn't they both say, yes, you're in ours?
So then he called the chancery and pretended not to be himself to see what answer he would get. And they couldn't figure it out either. So,
okay.
So they do exist on paper, and we do use them in important ways. St. Vincent de Paul tries to sort of organize their the charitable giving stuff, take care of the people within each neighborhood. You know, knights councils get organized, not exactly based on boundaries, but, you know, attached to a proper parish. So there are ways in which they're still used, but nothing like they were. Mm-hmm. And I want to make...
If you cross the street, you now belong to parish St. X,
right,
versus St. Y.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I want to make clear here, I'm not simply saying, you know, everybody go home to the place that you belong sort of thing. As I've had this conversation in the past, that's the message some people have gotten, and that's not what I'm saying. We've clearly moved past the territorial model, but I don't think that we have decided yet what the new one's going to be. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what I'm trying to call out. Not just in a theoretical kind of ivory tower sort of way, but in a real foot on the ground sort of way, how to make stuff work in an actual parish. Who are we? Why are we here? And what are we doing?
Well, and why do I want to belong?
Right. Why would I want to belong to this parish?
You know, if I love the Latin Mass, for instance, and that is offered at St. Anthony's, then, you know, and I want to be a part of that community that loves that old traditional sacred liturgy, not that our current liturgy isn't sacred. I don't mean that at all.
Sure.
But then that's the parish that I should join, mm-hmm, and be a part of and contribute to and of my time and talent and treasure.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of goes back to that, you know, which franchise opportunity do I want to go to? The one that only has salads or the one that has pasta?
Well, and it's, you know, if you think about it, the way that people relate to their gyms, right? I obviously don't go to the gym, but I'm aware that they exist.
I'm so confused. Yeah, I don't understand what that means.
But, you know, there's a gym next to the Hy-Vee there on Fleur, which I pass every single day.
And say hi.
And say hi. And I know that people that live in the neighborhood go there. But I also know that there are parents of kids in my school that go there on their way to pick the kids up from school who don't even live on our side of town, but who go there on their way to pick the kids up from school. There's got to be six gyms closer to them, but that works for like the time of day that they're around and when they've decided to exercise. So the way people make these decisions, they're very, very complex and oftentimes really not like predictable, or at least in a big enough way that we're able to organize ourselves around it, which then begs a sort of question, what are we for? I think I've been at Christ the King now for almost 2 years. I've been in charge for about a year. And, I'm still struggling to get a real clear sense of just what our sort of distinct gift or charism is. My experience of priesthood before I came to Des Moines was different than most of the guys here because I was a religious, right? I belonged to the Dominican Fathers, and so I was doing different kind of work. But that experience in religious life taught me a lot, especially working with women's religious communities who are dying. So
the community itself is dying, not necessarily the women. Well both, that is too.
Right,
but,
right.
Yeah.
So what happens, right, is that there's a lot of women's communities today that are going out of existence. And while there's a certain sort of mourning that rightfully happens around that because a beautiful thing is no more, most religious communities in the history of the church have gone out of existence. Mm-hmm. Most don't stick around.
They had a purpose. They serve that purpose.
And then it's done, right? Mm-hmm. So if your purpose is to take care of plague victims in Romania in the 1500s and there's no plague anymore, that community no longer has a purpose. And if your purpose was to educate Polish immigrants on the south side of Chicago and there's no more Polish immigrants to that part of Chicago, that community may no longer exist. In a similar sort of way, you know, I think when it's not the same as, but I think we can draw a parallel to the life of parishes in the life of the diocese. So parishes provide a particular gift or charism to the life of the local church. St. Anthony's has this particular gift relative to the traditional mass. The basilica likewise offers a very particular way of celebrating the divine liturgy that is different than you're going to find in most of the other parishes, and is different in many ways from St. Anthony's. But they're particular gifts that then are brought to the life of the church here in Des Moines. And they're particular gifts that they really can do, given the spaces that they have, that would be much harder to accomplish even if I wanted to at my sort of place. When I try and name the gift or the particular charism of a place like Christ the King, hospitality comes right up at the top. You know, people always talk about how warm and welcoming the place is. You know, even City View did a piece on us that way. And so there's clearly a sort of a gift there. But the question that, you know, I know that I as the parish priest am wrestling with, and that I think I know, like, the parish council and the finance council and the sort of leadership are struggling with now is, why do we exist? Like, why do we exist particularly? What is it about this particular parish?
At
Ninth and Wall that makes us different or distinct from St. Anthony's, from Indianola, from Norwalk, right? What makes us
special?
Because
you have parishioners from all those places.
From all those places and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what is it? And should it be the same or should it be different? I mean, I think that's the question. Same with our schools. Should they all, you know, just be little Xerox copies of each other?
Right.
Or should they have something unique? Like, St. Teresa's is known as being a STEM integrated school.
Right.
You know, does each school then say, oh, that's so good, we're going to be a STEM integrated school? Or do we become, what do we become?
Well, you know, I think a reasonable sort of element of that question, right, is when we identify these particular features of parish life, when are they essential to the life of this community, and when are they sort of accidental? You know, St. Teresa is known for its STEM work now.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a student there 25 years ago, STEM didn't exist, or it did, but we didn't call it that, right?
Right.
And now it's
STEM was on a flower.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying it's bad. My sister had a lot to do with the way STEM wound up at St. Teresa, so I'm very proud of the work that they've done.
Mm-hmm.
But is that like essential to the life of the charism of the school? Which is different than saying whether we should have it or not. But it depends a lot, because when it comes to the parish proper, a lot of this winds up hinging on the priest and the priest's individual personality. Well, again, you know, we have a relationship with each other. parish priests move around with some frequency.
Yeah, it's not like in the old days where, like, we had Monsignor McElvoy at Corpus Christi until
years.
He retired.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and all of a sudden some new guy comes on, you're like, who's he?
Right. No, that's exactly right. And, mm-hmm. and so, you know, the dilemma that the parish priest faces now is, you know, I could, you know, develop the whiz-bangiest best youth program in the whole city, and I could steal away all of Monsignor Chido's kids and all of Father Fontanini's kids and all of Father Kirby's kids, and then my next assignment is St. Anthony's, and I just have to steal them all back to the new place.
Right.
Because so this is really stupid, right? That's where you know, not coordinating the stuff. That's why I say it's dumb. Like, we do need to plan better and you know, leverage each other's strengths so that we're really using the best of what we've all got.
Well, and it's more than just the strengths of the individual. You know, if Indianola, you know, we've got a wonderful facility now. We have 90 kids coming to the youth group.
Right.
It's like, great, and they pull kids from all over, including non-Catholic kids.
Mm-hmm.
What a great evangelization
tool.
Model.
Yep.
And they have a great catechesis of the Good Shepherd. Great. Expand that. And then the parish down the road does the other thing that maybe the St. Thomas people would go to for that experience, and that we become, you know, really a larger Catholic community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. I think the other thing is, looking at these other places and recognizing the value or the gifts or the particular things they bring to the table, if we shift from a competition mindset to a cooperation mindset, then we no longer have to simply try and copy what everybody else is doing. So you know, St. Teresa's got the STEM thing, doesn't mean every school has to be sort of STEM focused. You know, we've got a wraparound daycare thing with the school, and that is really convenient, sure, but not every parish has the physical space to make
right.
that possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so do we need to build a new building just for the sake of being able to have a wraparound daycare? No, that's really foolish. Like, there are other models and other ways to do this. And so that these communities don't need to be simply carbon copies of one another, there are going to be things that stay the same. I mean, obviously, you're going to have Mass, you're going to have the sacraments, like because those are essential to the life of the community. But the other things that aren't essential might be what winds up giving it this character, this flair, this particular flavor.
Well, and as I look at that and this conversation of, well, let's look at this bigger picture, and, you know, I'm a parishioner at St. whatever, and what is my responsibility? I think we become really consumers and not members of the board.
Right.
You know, and so we're just waiting for, oh, ye pastor of great wisdom and knowledge, to say this is what we're going to do. Well, I mean, you know me well enough to know that my personality is like, no, I'm going to come to you and say, you know, Father PG, I think we should do this and this and this, or let me use my gifts to help us accomplish our goals, which actually I did with Father Ray when I was just there. But I think people have to have permission to say, I don't have to wait till the next strategic planning session or the next town hall meeting or
right.
the next whatever to say, you know, I have a gift of marketing, graphic design, accounting, whatever that gift is, and say, how can I help us achieve our goals?
Right.
But you have to know what the goals are at some point in time, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I think there are two things on that score that are really important. I think that one is that, you know, despite how the way some of us might carry ourselves, none of your priests are really that smart. I mean, and by that smart, I don't mean that they're unintelligent, but they're not smart enough to simply have this all planned out by themselves in a way that requires no assistance from anybody else.
I love our pastors, but they don't have a degree, the most of them, in business management.
Nope.
Or in marketing. Or, you know, some of them did. You know,
right.
they went to
sure.
undergrad and got their degree, and then they, you know, went on to become
a priest.
Or they
have other experience that happened.
Right.
Right.
But it's like, use the rest of us. Use and abuse us.
That's
you know, we have gifts to give. You know, and that if you're trying to do marketing and accounting and all those other things, when do you get to use the gifts that you've been given? You know, and I think, golly, we expect so much from our priests. Let us, you know, use us and let us help.
That's right. The other piece that's part of it is that when people come to the priest, There are two dynamics here, right? So one is, I'm never going to go to the priest because he never listens to me. Or the other one is, I go to the priest and I float something and he says no, and that means he doesn't like me or it's a bad idea or he didn't listen to me. And that just isn't always the case, right?
Right.
So the one thing that the priest does have access to that you don't is a whole lot of information. And he's often not at liberty to share a lot of that. And so, you know, somebody comes with a great idea for a new program. Well, the priest knows the parish budget, and he knows they're already strained. And so he knows that this year it's not possible, but he likes the idea well enough, he's willing to plan it into the budget for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So no, not right now doesn't mean no, nay, never.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes, you know, our tendency is to get real excited about something while we're thinking of it. We float it. It doesn't work. And so then we quit. And that's precisely what can't happen. That's where I loved the image that you used there. Members of the board rather than just customers or consumers.
Mm-hmm.
You really do have a stake. You're all stakeholders in mm-hmm. the life of this particular community. And because you have a stake in it, it means playing a long game, not a short game.
Mm-hmm.
There is a short game, and that oftentimes the pastor is the one who has to make the calls on because mm-hmm. he's the only one that's got all the data. But when it comes to the long game, as every usher in every parish has happily informed every new priest, I saw him come and I'll see you go.
Well, that's a ringing endorsement. Hey, folks, we need to take a quick break, speaking of endorsements, and we'll be right back. We're talking to Father P.J. McManus about the shifting boundaries of our parish. What is our role? What is the pastor's role? What can we do to make our parish life alive and thrive and growing as Jesus taught us? We'll be right back. When you donate to CTO, you're helping more and more families send their kids to Catholic school. That's great because more and more families qualify for tuition assistance every year. Your generosity makes a huge difference for thousands of families and kids who really need help. Plus, your donation qualifies you for great tax credits. Want to help? Please donate at ctoiowa.org. Let's do this for the kids and their future.
Thank you, Dental Associates, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365. With over 40 years' experience, Dental Associates is a group dental practice with the mission of promoting optimum health and well-being to all patients, providing preventative, restorative, and cosmetic dentistry for the entire family. Message underwritten by Dr. Kenton Gleichman, Dr. Steve Karbaka, Dr. Christine Mulcahy, and Dr. Ben Nagel. Dental Associates, addressing your smile, needs, and dreams. Online at DesMoines-DentalAssociates.com.
Thank you, Big Red Q Quick Print, for underwriting the Sports Report. Family owned and operated since 1980, Big Red Q Quick Print is a full service print shop ready to help you with all your printing needs with speed and accuracy. Forms, manuals, brochures, letterhead, envelopes, business cards, custom invitations, design, and bindery. Big Red Q Quick Print, located across from Merle Hay Mall, online at bigredq-desmoines.com. Big Red Q Quick Print. We make printing easy.
Thank you, Farm Bureau agent Cindy Schulte, for underwriting Catholic Women Now. As an authorized independent agent, Cindy's team can provide health insurance options from Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Iowa. Cindy Schulte at 1315 50th Street in West Des Moines or on the web at cindyschulte.com. 515-226-2111. Cindy and her team know health insurance.
Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Iowa is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association. Products available at Farm Bureau Financial Services.
Welcome back to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio. This is Jean Wells, along with my guest, Father P.J. McManus. I just made you a doctor of the church. How
First
about
things.
That? We are talking about shifting parishes, and we do have a lot of shifting parishes. We have a lot of parishes that are close by each other, and so you get to really pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
But as we're talking about, you know, who is our parish? What is our parish? What is the charism? And how do we know? I think there are people in our parish that don't even know what their own charisms are because
sure.
they don't ever think of that word. I mean, what would people of Christ the King say the charism of Christ the King is?
I don't know, but I intend to ask them. Last week I asked the parish council this very question. This is not a
really?
New thing. This is something I've been struggling with for really since I got there. And there was a lot of good conversation around the table, but of course that table only represents the 8 or 12 people that are on the parish council, right?
Which, do you want me to go on my soapbox about that? It's like, are they really discerned to be on parish council, or are they just willing souls that the pastor asks because they know they'll say yes?
So,
okay, we're going to move right on.
Yeah. Without commentary on particular persons, I would like to keep my job for at least,
okay,
like till the end of the week, but,
yeah.
I asked the council, and their response was, would you be brave enough to ask the parish?
Oh.
And what's funny is I've floated this by several priest friends over the last week or so, and they've all said, oh, that sounds like a very dangerous idea. Well, what the major concern is, it's not that – because if you get wonky feedback, you get wonky feedback.
Right.
Like in any survey, that's not impossible. But the what I think is significant here, right, is that you need to make sure, and when you solicit this kind of question, you know, what is our particular gift or charism is a very different kind of question than why do you think you need to exist? You know, the second one sounds like you're gunning to close the place, which I obviously am not and can't. Only the bishop can do that kind of thing. But the other is about discerning gifts. And this really is, I think, sort of what I'm coming to is the conclusion or inspiration from this thing is that if people perish differently than they have perished in the past, then pastors have to pastor different than they've pastored. And if the way parishes exist in the life of the local church now is primarily by way of personal gift or charism, particular gift or charism, then the job of the pastor becomes largely about discerning gifts and charisms, both individually, mm-hmm, the members of the community, and then collectively. What do we have to give that that's distinct or particular, which is not necessarily in competition or contradistinction from anybody else, is ideally actually complementary. We can do something that you can't do. You can do something that we can't do. Together, we can do it all.
Well, and it we talked about being a free enterprise system. It's like that's what companies do, products do. Why is Pepsi better than Coke?
Right.
Why is, you know, anything? It's like they identify what their market niche is, and they don't try, you know, a pasta place does not try to attract people that are on diets.
Right.
You know, not a good plan, because that's not going to work, you know, and not to say that we're like, you know, any place that does pasta. But we have a gift, and how much easier would it be for us to say, not only do we have the Catholic Mass, but we really embrace, if it is hospitality, you know, what does that mean, and how do you belong to a parish that truly loves each other in a way that cares for them, not at the front door of the church, but throughout the year?
Right, right. I think the other problem that it solves is, one of the things that we've lost in the sort of the passing of the territorial model of the parish is connection to the local neighborhood, and of course that's why these places came about to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I served a parish in St. Louis for a while called St. Pius V, and St. Pius hosts the archdiocesan refugee ministry. So in many ways it would be a lot like St. Ambrose is here, mm-hmm, in town. So the parish was at the time, I don't know, maybe half or two thirds, largely refugees, and the rest were basically suburban, mostly white people who just were really invested in having their children come up around people from other places, which is a very noble thing, but they had almost no connection to the neighborhood, which can create a real kind of tension, because then the investment isn't in the neighborhood, it's just in like the place. And I know that some of the more distinctly personal parishes here in Des Moines struggle with the same kind of thing. People come from far away to go to Mass, but then they go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we start imagining this by way of gift and charism, like I'm being called to this particular parish, not I'm choosing it because I like the priest better, the music better, the building better, or whatever, but I'm choosing this because I think I have a gift to bring here that coincides with the gift of this community, then discerning a parish becomes not so different than discerning a vocation. And then the commitment to the community winds up being not simply, you know, this is a place where I'm going to get the goods, get my spiritual
check,
mm-hmm, but the place where I come to really live and thrive. and are best equipped to bring that back to work and to school and to family life.
Well, and you know, that just comes full circle then, you know, because oftentimes you hear people complain about, I'm being asked again for money. Well, if I belong to a parish that is the refugee parish, and I want to be there because I want to embrace the refugee community, I am not going to be bent out of shape when I'm asked for money.
That's right.
You know, but if I belong to a parish that loves everything, whether I love it or not, and you're asked all the time
for
time and talent and treasure for something that you don't have a particular affinity to, then you do get kind of beat up about it.
Yep.
And yeah, and you know, not that I don't want to support the ministry, but you know, sometimes you said it a while back, the 4:30 mass at St. Teresa's is really serving the diocese well. You know, where does the diocese come into play, and what are the you know, goods and services that you talked about that, you know, should be coming from a diocesan perspective as opposed to an individual parish perspective? And that's another whole conversation. And actually, we're going to talk about that next week on Straight Talk. We're going to talk about the ADA, mm-hmm. but we're going to have different folks on. We'll have the gal that does the numbers, Maureen Kenny, but having different folks that address some of those services that the diocese should offer, because if you do a little bit of it at Christ the King, everybody piecemealing it, are we really serving the need that needs to be served?
And we're not doing justice to the people who need
it. Right, yeah. Great show. I'm going to give you last word. Do you have anything else that you would like to share about shifting parishes and challenge to us as your faithful listeners?
I would just say to everyone listening, think about this yourselves. Whatever parish you belong to, think about the particular gift that it brings to the life of the church here in Southwest Iowa. Talk to your pastor. You know, start this conversation in your own community. Pray for him. Not because priest's job are so hard and we're always tired and that's why we need your prayers, but just because we're not able to do all this on our own. And help him discern best what you can do for the local community and what your local community can do for the whole church.
Father PJ, thank you so much. Father PJ McManus is pastor of Christ the King in Des Moines. Father Dan Siepker joined us earlier in the show, pastor of Our Lady of the Rosary in Glenwood. Be sure to help. You're talking about money. Be sure to help those flooded areas, because it happened to us in 93 and in the early 2000s, and it's like, man, we know how that can impact them. Today, I'm asking St. John Vianney, patron saint of parish priests, and thereby the patron saint really for all of us as parishioners, to guide us in growing not only in our parish but in our relationship with other members of our community and in knowing and understanding our charism. Iowa Catholic Radio and Straight Talk is on the air because of your prayers and your generosity. I thank you so much. Please consider a tax-deductible gift to Iowa Catholic Radio whenever that works for you at iowacatholicradio.com. Coming up next is Christ is the Answer with Father John Ricardo. You can join us every Tuesday at 10 a.m., 10 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio. God bless.
Straight Talk every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio with Gene Wells. Brought to you by Blackbird Investments.